Ron Paul writes the foreword to your book. You support the idea of Congress auditing the Fed. What do you expect them to find?
Well, I support the idea of ending the Fed because of the attitude of Justice Scalia that delegated powers cannot be delegated away. The Congress can't lawfully give its authority to some private entity, even though this has been going on for almost 100 years. I don't know what will happen if the Fed is audited. I suspect we will find out that they loaned money to Saddam Hussein in 1986 when he was battling Iran. I suspect that we will find out that they loaned money to central banks of governments that wish us ill, that they basically have been conducting their own foreign policy. And I think the public will see once and for all the concept of fiat money. Example. When the Federal Reserve wants to put money in the pocket of some entity, it doesn't write a check. It doesn't deliver a wheelbarrow full of cash. It uses a bank that's a member of the Federal Reserve, and it adds 3 or 6 zeros to that bank's ledger sheet. And then it says to the bank, now you write a check. Well, where did the money come from? They just added zeros. They didn't put gold in Fort Knox. They didn't put cash into an account. They created it out of thin air, hence the name fiat, Latin for let it be, let it just happen. Money. I think when the public realizes that that is what has been happening, that before the Fed, the value of the dollar went up 13%, 1787, 1913. Since the Fed, 1913 to 2010, the value of the dollar went down 87%. The public will say, enough is enough.
Here's a very quick question. I think that it's a fascinating point to look at the decline of money, the value of money. By the same token, things are cheaper now than they used to be.
Well, things are cheaper in areas where competition has been permitted. Mm-hmm. Remember when a cell phone used to look like a brick and cost about $600. Now the telecoms can't give them away, and they're bigger than, they're about the size of 2 or 3 matchbooks. That's an example of an unregulated market where
Less regulated.
There isn't anything.
One of your other lies is that there is no free
correct.
Market.
The other day at Fox News, I challenged my friends on the business side, can you think of any area of human behavior free from government regulation? The great Charlie Casparino said to me, the elevation of the host at mass. I said, but the contents of the host and the salary of the baker that cooks the host is regulated by the federal government.
Talk a little bit about how did your worldview get started? Because you are you're a constitutionalist. A few years ago, you would have been called a conservative. You're much more libertarian now. What are the roots? You're from New Jersey. Is that where it all starts? Is there something in the water?
When I was a teenager, I read two books that had a profound influence on me. One was Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton, and the other was The Conscience of a Conservative by Senator Barry Goldwater, to whom this book is dedicated. Both showed me the teaching that I found so attractive, which is the following. The individual is greater than the state. The free market is utterly indispensable to human prosperity. And an unrestrained government will eventually seize all property and take all liberty. So if you ask me what I do, I tell you that I'm a night watchman. I watch the government under cover of darkness because when no one is looking, it will steal our property and our liberty. My views modified over the years. You and I once talked about my first book, Constitutional Chaos, What Happens When the Government Breaks Its Own Laws, in which I had examples of things that I saw in my courtroom, even a few examples where the government took a run at me personally in the years that I was on the bench. It was those years that hardened my view that the government is not your friend. I think it's also understandable, even though libertarianism today is so popular among young people, to get resentful towards the government the more it interferes with you. And our government interferes with you more with every tick of the clock. Even the great Ronald Reagan rose taxes, expanded government, enhanced regulation, and did many things which were contrary to the wonderful, beautiful libertarian words he articulated.
How do you feel about the current moment? On the one hand, we have this growth in tea parties and people saying we need to restrain government, younger people being more libertarian. At the same time, the nanny state continues to grow. We've just witnessed a government run at health care. Or who's winning, who's losing? What does this say about the fight for freedom or liberty?
It says that Jefferson was right, that in the long run, government and order would increase and liberty would decrease. Now, you can say blacks have more freedom, women have more freedom, gays have more freedom. The government now enforces civil liberties. But think about the example of, can you think of anything free from federal regulation? It's almost impossible to do it. The reason these chairs that we're on now have five legs is because of an act of Congress. The strength of the water pressure in your shower, an act of Congress. The size of the toilet bowl, an act of Congress. The leather in our shoes, the tanning process, an act of Congress. None of this is in the Constitution. But the public blithely accepts it. Unless these things are challenged at every front, the nanny state will be upon us, and sooner or later the government will run out of other people's money. And that means the government will own the means of production and there will be no freedom left.
So are you optimistic that government can be beaten back, or is it an endless struggle? It's Moriarty and Holmes going over Reichenbach Falls.
I think we are about to witness one of the last great battles for freedom, which is the effort of the Tea Party movement, the Liberty movement, something you've devoted your professional life to and I've devoted my present career to promulgating. We'll take on the government in the ballot box. And if it prevails, government will recede. The government once drew to it people who loved liberty. It now draws to it people who love power. In my view, this we don't have a two-party system. We have a one-party system, the big government party. It has a Republican wing that likes war and deficits and assaults civil liberties. It has a Democratic wing that likes welfare and taxes and assaults commercial liberties. Between the two of them, there's hardly a liberty they're unwilling to assault. But neither of them is willing to stay chained down, as government, as Jefferson used to say, by the Constitution. The most liberal justice in modern times, William O. Douglas, said the whole purpose of the Constitution is to keep the government off the people's backs, even though most of his votes were to help FDR get on the people's backs. Is it hopeless? No. But are we nearing an end game? In my view, yes.
Let me ask you as a final question. From your previous book, Dred Scott's Revenge, which is a fascinating history of judicial law and institutionalized racism in American history. One of the places where a lot of orthodox libertarians were against the Civil Rights Acts of the mid-1960s, saying that the government overstepped its boundaries by transforming public spaces or private spaces into public accommodations, so that we really should let the free market or social sanctions stop people from being racist in terms of offering movie theater tickets or hotel rooms to anybody. You're a supporter of the Civil Rights Acts. Could you explain where that comes from?
I probably would have voted against the Civil Rights Acts had I been in Congress at the time. I am a supporter of removing color from the government's armament. So if Mrs. Murphy wants to have a garden party and invite only the Gillespies and not the Napolitanos, she can do it because it's her backyard. If Mrs. Murphy has a grocery store and wants only the Gillespies and the Napolitanos, and in my opinion, she can do it. But she can't use the government to enforce it because the government can't make decisions based on race. The evil spawned by official segregation in this country was what the government did. And it all came from one Supreme Court case called Plessy against Ferguson. This is the white car versus the, I'm going to use the phrase from the day, colored car on a train in Louisiana. This was not, the defendant was not the train company. The train company wanted the races to mingle. The train company wanted to make money. They wanted to sell as many tickets and have as few cars as possible. It was the legislature of the state of Louisiana that made them have a white car and a colored car. And the Supreme Court of the United States let them do it under the so-called separate but equal doctrine. If Ollie's rib pit doesn't want to serve Italians, I think he has the right not to serve Italians. But he can't call the police when an Italian shows up.
Okay. I want to thank Judge Andrew Napolitano, author of the New York Times best-selling book, Lies the Government Told You, a chief legal analyst for Fox News, and a friend of freedom. Thanks for talking,
Judge. And a friend of yours.
Thank you.
Thank you.